This episode of Literary Treks is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store with the new Squarespace Commerce feature. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK4.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading, in case I got bored.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Literary Treks, our dedicated Star Trek books and comics podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as always, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, how are you doing this week?
Doing okay, Chris. It's hump day, which is Wednesday, for those who don't know, and Kate is going to have a field day with that. But, you know, we have recently been talking a lot about the weather every time we get together, Chris. And Worf and his extremist group, they've actually struck my house now. The air conditioner is out. Really disappointed. Wow. Yeah, turned on the air conditioner today. Doesn't turn on. Luckily, the heater works. So just in case I'd really like this place to feel more like Vulcan, then I'm in luck, but I'd really rather be on Andoria right now. It is quite humid and warm in my house, so goodness. Worf, come on.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you refer to it as the air conditioner, because, of course, I refer to it as the environmental control system.
Well, that's true. I'm more of, in the vein, Dr. McCoy. So I tend to call things by their old school names, like the Georgia Mint Julep and things like that. So, yeah, you and your fancy highfalutin environmental control systems, I don't know anything about that.
I think there was an anomaly affecting my environmental control system recently. It was an anomaly caused by an anomaly that was just making it a little bit too warm in my
house. Wow, are you on Star Trek Voyager right now? Because that sounds like a plot from one of those episodes.
I think it's actually a line spoken by Harry Kim at one point. And we'll find out, because in the feature today, we are going to talk about four different Star Trek Voyager comics. And we're going to be joined by Tristan Riddell from To the Journey. But before we do that, let's jump into the news that we have this week, Matthew. And first up, we have some great news that David Mack and Greg Cox have both been nominated for the Scribe Award.
Yeah, this is really exciting. The International Association of Tie-In Media Writers has announced their nominees for the latest set of Scribe Awards, and they recognize excellence in the field of doing tie-in novels. And as we talked to Greg Cox last week, we have talked to David Mack before, you know, writing a tie in novel and in those universes is not easy. You know, Greg talked about really needing to be able to mimic the style and the voice of these different characters from all these different universes, and these authors really do it well. And I'm very glad that they're getting this recognition.
Yeah, it is hard, because if you don't get that aspect right, it really throws the reader out of the story. So that is a unique challenge to tie in fiction. But again, you know, David and Greg, two of the great tie-in writers, I'm very glad to see them nominated for this award. And Mac was nominated for the Next Generation novel Cold Equations, Book One, The Persistence of Memory. And Cox was nominated for The Rings of Time, which was a TOS story.
Yeah, both great books. If you haven't picked them up and read them, I would highly encourage that, especially just Dave Max being in a trilogy. So you're going to keep going with that. And then, of course, getting to jump in with the TOS crew on Rings of Time. You won't be disappointed.
So very excited about that. We'll be keeping our eyes open to see the results and find out if they actually take home these awards, which are again from the IAMTW, which is a little bit hard to say, but the International Association of Media Tie-In Writers. All right. Well, let's move on to the next item here, Matthew. This is Seasons of Light and Darkness. And what can you tell us about this one?
Well, it's not a new novel in the JJ universe. I know it sounds like it might be, but actually, this is going to be a new ebook novella. You know, we just had Stuff of Dreams come out by James Swallow. We're going to be getting another one. I really like these because they're great one-shot reads. You know, you can usually read it in about an hour because they're about 100 pages or so. This is going to be by Michael A. Martin. And he told Star Trek Books community fan page that his next story is going to be a TOS story. And it's going to be starring Dr. McCoy. And, you know that I really love Dr. McCoy. So I'm really looking forward to this. And we'll be seeing this in June. So that's really exciting to me.
Yeah, that's nice. I do like the novellas because sometimes, especially if you're on a commute, it's great. You can, let's say you commute here in Tokyo, you can take one of these and start reading it when you get on the train and finish it by the time you get to work. So it's a perfect size for Star Trek fans who maybe, you know, want to just get a quick little fun fix from great authors. So glad to see that they're doing a few more of these now.
Well, let's skip over to comic news, and what do we have coming up for us in July, Chris?
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about July. I've been doing these shows now for a couple of years, and I always find it interesting how when we talk about comics, we're always looking so far down the road, and we don't even have ongoing number 20 yet, but we're going to be getting ongoing number 23 in July, which is part 3 of the official sequel to the film that's called After Darkness.
This is really interesting, Chris, because, we've kind of been getting hints of this throughout the film with the Klingons and of course, with the brand new trailer. It looks like the galaxy's on the verge of all-out war. I almost feel like it's a Star Wars episode, but no, it's not. It's just Star Trek, and the drumbeats of all-out galactic war are growing stronger in this JJ universe, and so it looks like it's going to be up to Kirk and Spock and McCoy and the rest of the Enterprise crew to do something about that. So I'm wondering, are we going to see an all-out war in the comic, or are they going to wait for that in the third movie, and how would that work? I mean, you would do a whole war in the comics and then, you know, get to the movie, and like if you hadn't read the comics, you didn't know there was a whole war.
I don't know. Yeah, it would be interesting. If a new movie were coming out in 1 year, maybe there they could use 12 issues to bridge the gap between the potential of war and the actual outbreak of war. But we know we're going to have 3 years at least before the next movie comes out. And I don't know, that's a long time to kind of keep something like that going. So I don't know. We'll just have to see. But at least we do have some idea now what we will be seeing in ongoing as we move beyond the movie.
Well, and it does say here that the adventures of Kirk, Spock, and the crew of the Enterprise continue. So apparently the big three most likely are still around, you know, Kirk, Spock, McCoy, it seems like most of the crew of the Enterprise is around as well, and the Enterprise is around. So, for all you people who thought that the Enterprise is going to crash in the next film, it's not going to happen.
Well, but you don't know that. It just says the Enterprise, you know. A new ship is going to have
that
the name Enterprise,
true.
So...
That is true. You're right, Chris. I'll retract. It could crash. And
plenty of letters in the alphabet.
I love that quote.
All right, well, we have one more thing coming out in July. This is Star Trek Volume 5. And this one is going to gather some more of those character backstories that we've been seeing in ongoing. We're going to have the McCoy backstory. We're going to have the Scotty backstory, where we get to see him try to beam Porthos to San Francisco via Mars. And also, we're going to see Sulu and Chekhov's first meeting at Starfleet Academy, and how everyone, you know, comes together to be on the Enterprise. And so that's all going to be gathered together in Star Trek Volume 5. So if you've been waiting to pick these up as they're gathered in omnibus format, that will be coming to you in July.
Well, next we have something really interesting, Chris. The Library of American Comics had collected the Star Trek Newspaper Comics Volume 1 together, and it come out. I still haven't gotten a copy of it. I really need to get that ordered because I've heard it's fantastic. And they've now started working on Volume 2. But they're on the lookout for more. They've already located a batch of the strips for 10 stories. And what they're really hoping for is to reach out to the fan community to find higher quality versions of some of them, because they'd really like to reproduce this at the highest quality they can. So if you have any of the actual dailies from February 1982 through January 1983, and you'd be willing to lend them to them for scanning purposes, or provide high-resolution scans, they really like you to contact them at info@loacomics.com. And this will really help them to be able to put together the highest quality version of this book they can. Now, they do say they do need the original strips, not photocopied versions. So if you do have any of these, please help them out, because I'm really excited about picking up the first volume of this and seeing what the second volume will hold as well. So this is a really cool thing, and it's something that we fans can actually help do. And as you've said a million times, Chris, you know, Star Trek has some of the greatest fans out there. They're great at collecting. So this is where your collecting can really come in handy for the entire community of fans.
Oh, most definitely. I'm looking forward to seeing the first volume of this, and of course the second when it comes out. I completely missed these newspaper comics when I was growing up. They weren't in every paper, and I don't think they were in the papers in Birmingham where I grew up. So it's great that they're collecting these and they can get them out to all the fans. And we'll put a link in the show notes to who you can contact. The editor is Dean Molyneux, and of course, Matthew just gave you the email address, info@loacomics.com. And again, if you go to the show page for this show, trek.fm/LT17, there will be a link there as well, so that you can contact Dean if you happen to have some of these comics and you want to be involved in the project. And elsewhere in what IDW is working on, in September, there is another reprint on the way, Matthew. This one is Best of Klingons, and it's going to be coming out in September.
Yeah, this is going to be really exciting, and I love Klingons, and what I really like is that this cover has Chang and Gorkon on it, so I'm really excited to see this. It's going to include an original four-part DC start to the original series, and then it's also going to include the six-issue Klingons Blood Will Tell series by Scott and David Tipton. And so this looks really good. I'm really excited to see this. I'm also hoping that maybe IDW will do a digital version of this as well, because that's really a lot of the way I like to consume most of my comics these days.
Yeah, me too, just because it's the only way I can really get them in Japan. And also because they just look so beautiful on the iPad. The artwork just pops so much. I really love it. This says that this volume is more fun than is allowed by Klingon law. So I'm going to be really careful, because the last thing I want to do is be sent to Rua Pinte after reading these.
That, or just be on the wrong side of somebody's mechlith. I mean, I just, yeah. So if you're going to be reading this around any Klingons, I'd say make sure they've consumed copious amounts of blood wine. And then that way, you'll easily be able to deflect any of their advances towards you with a weapon.
That's good advice. Okay, very last item in news before we jump into our feature with Tristan. Ongoing number 20, which we have been waiting for, has been delayed. And I don't know, IDW, they just have not been able to catch up with the schedule after the delays that originated with dock strikes in the U.S. back around the end of last year. So this is still going to be delayed, And Ongoing number 20 is scheduled to be out now on May 8th, which will put it just about a week before Into Darkness launches.
And we'll talk about it then for you.
Matthew, let's take a break for a moment here and talk about our sponsor, Squarespace. Now, Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio. And with the new commerce feature that they've introduced, you can even put together an online store in just a matter of minutes. You can be up and running. You know, they've worked out a deal with Stripe to make it very easy for you to accept orders and process credit cards and handle all the different aspects of commerce. There are so many things that you can do with Squarespace. Now, I use it in two ways myself. I use it for my personal blog. I also use it for Trek FM, which is a very large site. And I use it for some other sites for clients that are a little bit smaller than Trek FM is, but still very robust sites.
One of the other things that I really like, Chris, is the fact that you can import seamlessly. You know, for me, I use a WordPress blog. And so if you're using WordPress or Tumblr or Blogger or Squarespace 5, you can easily import all of that content from those blogs there to help create your brand new blog on Squarespace, which I don't know about you, but I spent a lot of time setting up my blog on WordPress. And so I was really excited to see that Squarespace offers you this portability to just be able to take everything you've already done and to be able to move it over to your brand new blog on Squarespace. And then, of course, use all those fantastic tools that Squarespace gives you to make an even better blog.
Right. It's a great feature too, because as we'll tell you, you can try it free for 14 days. They don't even ask you for a credit card, but you do have access to this feature during that time. So you can take your WordPress blog and you can import that into your trial site on Squarespace and see exactly how it's going to look. And then you can use the tools, like you said, to tweak it and make it your own. And then you can compare that with your experience on WordPress. And it doesn't even impact your existing WordPress site. So you can try it out. Matthew, we talked about the commerce feature a little bit at the beginning here. And it's really, truly never been easier to start selling online than it is with this new Squarespace commerce feature, because it lets you add a fully integrated store into your website. And more importantly, it allows you to instantly start accepting payments. And accepting payments is the real kicker, because that's what has always been, as I've set stores up for clients, as I've set stores up for myself, that's the big sticking point that always requires research and jumping through a lot of hoops to get it set up and working.
Definitely, Chris. And along with that, making it very easy to manage your store really painlessly by managing the inventory, processing the orders, making sure that you get to be print out the packing slips, you can customize the emails. All of these things make it so easy to be able to run your own personal store and what you would like to sell on your website. And all of us, I think, would like to be able to earn some extra money. And this is a perfect way to be able to do that through your Squarespace website.
In addition to those points of the commerce feature, I'd also like to point out that you can quickly set up multiple shipping methods. You can set up coupons, a variety of coupons. And a really big one, which actually can cost you quite a bit of money in having to bring in consultants to set up for you, is dealing with tax rules. This Squarespace commerce system will automatically handle the taxes that you need to charge on these purchases, because it can get really complex, especially in the United States, where you know each state, even each city, county, can set their own tax rates. You've got states like California, where they have different tax rates that need to be handled for these online purchases throughout the state. That's all taken care of for you here. So it's just out of mind for you. The system does it for you. You can focus on making great products and selling those through your site. So we'd like to invite you to try this for yourself. It's really easy. Squarespace gives you a 14-day full-featured trial. No questions asked, no credit card. You just go sign up, create the account. You have access to all the tools. And then when you decide to sign up, Squarespace has an offer for Trek FM listeners. You can get 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts by using the offer code TREK4. So the way you do this is you go to squarespace.com/trek. Do go to that URL to tie it into Trek FM and use the offer code TREK4. And you'll be up and running in just a matter of minutes. I guarantee you, you're going to love it. Squarespace has everything you need to create an exceptional website, and you'll be supporting our sponsor and helping us bring this programming to you each week.
Well, Chris, we have a special treat for everyone. We are going to be talking about Voyager comics. Now, these comics came out quite some time ago, and IDW has republished some of these great old comics from Windstorm, and we chose this section because we also wanted to have on our illustrious colleague, Tristan Riddell, international sex symbol, from To The Journey.
To The Journey!
To talk.
To The Journey!
Exactly. If Char was here, she would say you both failed.
She's been more lenient with us recently, though.
We wanted to talk these Voyager comics, and Tristan, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, no, thanks for having me. As you know, I love Voyager, but you guys can bring me on even if you don't talk about Voyager. I mean, I do know other Star Trek besides Voyager. I mean, I love myself some Janeway, but I also am a fan of the Sisko and the Archer and the Picard and all that.
I think he's aiming for my spot, Chris.
Sounds like it. Well, he is a shampoo model today, apparently, so.
That is true. I mean, international sex symbol and shampoo model. I can't compete.
That might be a joke lost in our audience right now.
Yeah, we always have screen names as we record, and that's reminds me of the old Fabio commercials a little bit. Before he did the I can't believe it's not butter commercials.
And get hit in the face by a dove or a goose or something like that. I can't remember. Mm.
That's true. You have cut your luscious locks, though. They're not quite as long as Fabio's.
It's true.
Yeah. Well, one of the cool things I noticed about these comics is I was just looking at the whole thing, and I like to look at the credits page to see who's responsible for these. And one of the cool things that I found was that Drew Struzan, famous movie poster artist, done such things as Star Wars, Indiana Jones, Harry Potter, just is so many famous films that he's responsible for. Actually did the cover art for this book, which I thought was really cool. I love his artwork. And then the second thing is that these were originally edited by Jeff Marionette, who is a Star Trek author, and his newest book, The Folded World, will come out at the end of the month. And he was also the VP of marketing for Windstorm and the editor-in-chief for IDW for a while. So he has a long history with comics. So I just thought that was pretty interesting background on these comics for everyone. For those who don't know, because we haven't told you, we're reading Star Trek Classics Volume 3, Encounters with the Unknown. And all of these revolve around Star Trek Voyager. And just general impressions, guys. Give me your general impressions. Tristan, what did you think just kind of reading through these four different comics?
I was bored to tears.
Were you really?
I really was. I was trying to find something. Like, while I read all of them in one day.
Yeah.
And I didn't parcel it out because I wanted to just consume it as much as I could. And as I was reading it, I was like, okay. Like, I'm a very critical person when it comes to comic books, and I just couldn't find anything that I liked. And
nothing at all. Okay.
Not really. I mean, like, I don't like one-off comics very much. Like, I love season-long storylines, but...
Well,
it was nice to see the crew again, I guess you could say.
Well, I think that's a good point, because we have a mix here. We have False Colors, Avalon Rising, Elite Force, and Planet Killer. And when you talk about one-off comics, False Colors, the first one in this collection, is one of those where, I don't know, I thought it was an interesting idea. It had sort of a live fast and prosper kind of vibe to it, where you've got these aliens who are posing. And in this case, you've got these aliens who are posing as Borg. And the idea is kind of interesting, but I got to the end of it, and I'm thinking, like, you know, if this were an episode, this would be like Act 2 right now. And it doesn't go anywhere after that.
No.
Well, Tristan, one of the things, too, I was going to ask you, just because you haven't been on the show before, you mentioned one of the things that you know, you like about comics. Just give us a little history about you and Star Trek comics in general, and just comics and how what you like and what you don't like.
Huh, that's a really interesting question, because my first Star Trek comic, I was extremely young, and it was a Next Generation comic, and it was when Next Generation was still on the air, and it was a mirror universe comic of Next Generation. I mean, like, I think like Will Riker had an eye patch, Worf had this gigantic scar on his face, and Locutus was in there. Like, Picard was Locutus in the mirror universe, and I can't even remember the plot, but I just remember being floored, because I wasn't a big comic fan until I found this Star Trek comic, and I was like, whoa, 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 this exists? Like, Star Trek stories outside of television exist?
This is
like,
a thing?
That was my, yeah, this was my first exposure to that, and so I thought that was amazing, and then I read more, and I was like, oh, Star Trek comics suck, and so I went on to something else, and so I became a huge Batman fan.
Ah, excellent.
So that's basically how it happened. Like, I still have that comic somewhere. I still have that comic somewhere, and so, I keep it just to remind me.
So you're waiting for the Star Trek Batman and Robin crossover series to start at IDW, right?
I would watch that. Maybe not Batman and Robin, but I would like to see the Dark Knight somehow make his way onto the Enterprise and then try to find his way out. Like, it's kind of a where they can't detect his presence because he's wearing an Neutronium cape. You know,
ooh,
or something like
Neutronium
that.
Cape, good call.
Yeah. The yeah. Seven crafted in 30 minutes for him, because she's also a seamstress.
No, okay.
Well, Neelix is a seamstress, if you caught
God,
that too.
He really is.
In that comic here, he says, oh, I can help with that.
I know, I like that.
And then they send her to the doctor, and everybody gets fixed up by the doctor, and Neelix is helping for some reason, because now not only is he a cook, but he's also a seamstress.
I can do that.
Like, what?
Yeah. So we're talking about the comic book False Colors, where they say, like, okay, well, let's go over to the Borg ship, but we have to pretend to be Borg, so let's dress up like Borg. And did you notice that once they got there, the guys immediately ran away, and then Seven took off her Borg outfit immediately so that we could see her in her original outfit?
Right.
And then, like, 2 minutes later, Chakotay and Tuvok take it off, thus making it completely pointless that they dressed up like Borg.
They were just trying to give Neelix some busy work, make him feel like he's part of the crew.
It's just so strange.
Well, and I thought it was interesting, because I guess maybe the internal logic was, okay, we think that this is a Borg-run ship, so we need to dress up like Borg so we can fool them. Once Seven realizes that those people aren't Borg at all, she's like, oh, well, there's no reason for me to be wearing this stupid outfit. I mean, people want to see me in the blue outfit anyway, so I should take it off.
See, exactly. That's why she took it off. But the thing is, that kind of logic is flawed in the Star Trek universe, because whenever they've gone onto a Borg cube, they've been completely ignored until they were threatened, no matter what they were wearing.
It's very true. It's very true. So, apparently, Neelix and the Doctor just needed something to do in this comic. And so, even though it was completely useless, we're going to give them something to do. Anyway.
And all the scenes after they dress up as Borg and they're heading over, they have, well, there's the scene where they're jumping out of the airlock, and that I thought J.J. Abrams would love, because, you know, in Into Darkness, there's lots and lots of jumping off of stuff going on.
And that's immediately what I thought, too. I immediately thought about Trailer 3.
Right. Let's jump off stuff. And then I had the First Contact vibe, where they're walking along the hall in their spacesuits. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, that was actually a pretty cool scene, you know, and a good idea. You know, okay, we have to get on the ship. We need to do it in a kind of a sneaky way. So we'll spacewalk, and you don't see that a lot in Star Trek. So I liked that idea comic-wise that you can do that, and, you know, obviously it doesn't cost you any money.
Except the ridiculous case in Nemesis where Data actually flies far through space to
can
get
we
over
not
to
talk them. About Nemesis on this podcast? I mean, these comics, at least this issue, was not good. It's bad enough. Let's not bring Nemesis into it.
I do like your point, though, Matthew, where where it's like you can do whatever you want in comics and it doesn't cost you anything more. Right. And I like that we got to see a non-humanoid alien in Planet Killer. I enjoyed that.
I'm glad you mentioned this because there's one thing about that. And I agree. It's cool that in comics they can do these non-humanoid aliens because in reality, other life in space is not all going to be humanoid with two arms and two legs like us. But of course, there are not a lot of alien actors walking around Hollywood, so they have to do this. But what I found interesting about that race in Planet Killer is that the design of their ships looks a lot like them.
I could not tell the difference.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
And what I was thinking, okay, and in this case, it actually looks really cool. But I was thinking, like, what if we designed our ships to look a lot like us? And there's like this giant head floating in space, and you've got like arms sticking out of the hull.
So it just looks like Superman flying in space, the ship, like
it would be
two
like
big legs or the engine
action figure in Star Trek: The Voyage Home, like when they complete the wrap around the sun, and you see that. That mannequin float through the water real fast.
Oh,
that's pretty much what it would
be. That's what it would look like.
Oh, goodness.
But I was picturing so much of that ship looked like the alien's head. And so I was picturing a ship that looks a lot like us, but it's mostly head. And it has like little limbs coming out.
The only thing, though, that I didn't really understand about that issue, and we were talking about Planet Killer there, is that alien wakes up and speaks English?
I know.
What? Like, there's no, oh wait, we have to configure the universal translator at all. It just automatically opens its mouth. It's not even a humanoid. So it opens some kind of orifice.
That's not the first time we've seen that in Star Trek.
Yeah,
I'm going to say that, but that happens on the TV series all the time, too. I mean, the only series that actually handled universal translation in any realistic way at all is Enterprise, where they actually had Hoshi trying to decipher languages. Because it's you know, I can buy the idea that this universal translator works immediately when you're dealing with known races. And there could be hundreds or thousands of known races, but they often encounter completely unknown races, and they're able to communicate with them as well. And so it's just one of those things where I guess the TV show would be pretty boring if they spent the first 20 minutes just trying to figure out how to say hello.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
Week after week.
I can't stand it when people are that big of a stickler. Like, yeah. Matt, I understand your point, but like when they take it too far and they constantly complain about it.
Yeah.
Like, would you really want to see that on screen? Would you really? You know, like
by
it's
the time
the most boring episode every week, you know, the same thing happens. Okay, they're going to meet an alien. It's going to take 20 minutes for them to learn how to talk to it.
And in this comic, Planet Killer, by the time they figure out how to say howdy to this alien, the third planet is already destroyed.
Yes.
So in Enterprise, it was all about syntax and verbal utterings, but I could have sworn that I heard Kirk in TOS talk about how it works on brainwaves. On the universal translator. Am I wrong on that?
Well, I think that the Starfleet one works on syntax, but the one that was designed by the United Earth Space Agency, that one works on brainwaves.
Okay.
Yeah. That one was deemed too dangerous, though, because it kept picking up Kirk's daydreams, so nobody wanted that.
Right.
That's what Spock was picking up in his monitor.
Exactly. Every time he would look in that special little, you know, thing right there, that's what he was picking up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in general, you know, we talked a little bit about false colors and just kind of how you get to the end of the issue, and you do feel a little bit like that's it. There isn't like, so they get away. Nothing's really happened. I mean, I guess it's like Voyager, so we just hit the reset button and go on.
And how lucky was it that half the Borg half of the ship was literally cut down the middle? I mean,
I know. It's fantastic.
Like, none of the systems were integrated. It was all just on the starboard side of the ship, and the alien stuff was on the port. And so when it split, it was really convenient.
Yeah, that was my favorite part. I feel like Borg, you know, engineers are geniuses. You know, they really know how to integrate themselves with other ships. They just do it without, you know, really entangling themselves too much.
That's because
just in case they have to get out of there.
They assimilate all the geniuses on every planet that they encounter.
That's so true. That's true.
I will say about False Colors, I mean, I wouldn't call it a reset button exactly. It was just kind of like, hey, we ran out of pages, so hope you enjoyed what you got. It's kind of that feeling.
I think it was focused on we lived, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, but it actually was kind of like a lot of Voyager episodes, though. It was this, hey, we had an encounter with someone, a bunch of stuff happened, and we got away at the end. See you next week. You know, you feel, I'm not saying all Voyager episodes are like that, but you have to admit that there are a lot of Voyager episodes where that pretty much is the storyline. It is kind of just an adventure. And so I will say about False Colors that I thought the writing was very good. The voices were really good.
That's true.
I could feel the
characters. I felt like all of these, they get the characters. So yeah. Now, my favorite page in this one here was page 38. And Chakotay comes over the comm. He's on the other ship. And he says, "Captain, we have a problem." And she's got her arm on the rest of the of her command chair, and she's got this bored look on her face, and she says, "Why am I not surprised?" It's like she's the most bored person on the planet right now. It's like the TV, you know, view screen is just not giving her anything. HBO does not come in this far away. I just loved it.
Another thing I like about Janeway, both at False Colors and Elite Force, is that the artist is really clued in on Janeway's two-finger command style. The way she's dismissed with two fingers, and she's like, "I need to know now," with two fingers in the air. And you know, actually, Kate Mulgrew does that on this show, and art has really picked that up. That's why, actually, Tristan, you guys had an episode of To the Journey, I believe, called Dismissed, right? About Janeway.
It was all about Janeway, just, it was Janeway's best quotes. And I think all of the ones that I picked ended with dismissed. But speaking of favorite pages, though, my favorite page, I think I have a different version than you, but it's on my page 9. The abs on 7 are insane. They look angry. They're so ripped.
Yeah.
And it is, I've in all of the series, it's like when Locutus, like when Picard became Locutus and you looked at his abs. Like the metal plating that they put on him, that's almost exactly what she has, just with her blue outfit. And yes, this woman was always in shape on the show, but it looks like she was training with the Spartans before she came into this comic book.
Well, that's what you get in comics, right? It's when we get to Elite Force, I was really impressed at how ripped all of the 24th century Mako are. Because
they are
rippling chests.
Insanely ripped.
Did you guys play that video game?
I did. It was fantastic, actually.
I think it's probably the best Star Trek video game ever made. I can say that easily.
Yeah,
it is
a first-person
shooter. It's amazing, and the storyline is fantastic. And I expected a little bit more out of this comic, but they were trying to cram way too much
into
too few pages.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I think what we really need to do, though, is we need to take a little break. And because we're really going to like this next comic, and I think we need to talk about the piece de resistance, which is Avalon Rising. This comic is, I think, the comic of comics.
I think so.
And it's fantasy and sci-fi and Camelot all thrown in one.
This is Barclay's ultimate holodeck fantasy if he had been assigned a Voyager. This is just right out of Barclay's brain right here. You know, I read Avalon Rising last night before I went to bed. I was really tired, and I decided to read Avalon Rising, though. And as a result, I ended up going to bed laughing, because this comic just, oh my goodness. I mean, Janeway, what is she? She's like a cross between Wonder Woman and Xena Warrior Princes and
Witchblade.
Yeah, that's
Witchblade
exactly it.
And every woman who you've ever seen in a Pantene commercial.
It when I saw the cover of this one, I was like, what have you guys gotten me into? And I scroll through and I seriously had no idea what I was going to get. I was so confused for like the first half of the comic book. I was like, what am I reading? And I did like how out of all the characters that were in it that were retold through the Doctor, Tom Paris was the only one who didn't change.
Right. Yeah.
Like he was exactly. still sarcastic and a smartass.
And the story about him is exactly the same. I need someone to guide my ship. I hear you're the best.
This was very reminiscent of the Star Trek Voyager episode Muse, where B'Elanna was crash-landed on a planet, and it was much more like our Greek and Roman days than our medieval days, and where she had to tell this guy stories, and he would perform them in front of his audience.
Right,
and,
exactly.
He would get everything just about right. And so, yeah, it's basically the same concept, except there's no weapons.
The ship... Is there any better artwork than this ship in a comic?
They couldn't have gotten any more inventive with the sail. The sail on the mast is literally just a compact.
I mean, so for those who haven't read this, you'll see when you pick up this comic, and you have to pick up this comic. If there's one Star Trek comic that you read in your life, it's got to be Avalon Rising. And this is an old clipper out on the ocean. It's wooden, but the sail... has the Starfleet insignia, circa Voyager, you know, with the kind of the rectangular base. And then everyone in medieval clothing as they sail the
armor,
open seas and armor.
With a faint Starfleet coloring to them. So Janeway has a red, Chakotay has his red.
Yeah.
You got Tuvok in his gold. I mean, it's hysterical.
It's fantastic. And they have the Starfleet insignia etched into the wood on the side of the ship as well. It's
beautiful craftsmanship.
Phasered the Prime Directive. I mean, they phasered it, picked up the dustings with a dustpan and threw it out the airlock. It's just ruined this culture.
Yeah, and I like the way that they just do the Kirk thing to get around it. Oh, well, this other race has already ruined it. You know, they're going to destroy themselves if we don't get involved. So we have to get involved.
Yeah.
You know, so that part was a little acceptable, but...
And then at the end, it's completely the Kirk thing as well, where they ask the Doctor, well, you have to leave. Can you at least give us a new mission before you leave? It's like, Janeway's like, no, we can't do that because, you know, you're on your own now. We can't do that. We would be just as wrong as the other people. So look, I know that we destroyed your entire lifestyle, but... You figure it out. We've got some other cultures to go mess with. It's totally Kirk from TOS.
But right before that, the Doctor's going to give you our values, and then we're going to leave so that your values are now replaced by ours.
Way to go, emergency medical hologram. Way to mess everything up.
Oh,
but emergency medical moron.
But he had to do it before he completely disappeared, right?
Well, and that part didn't make sense either. Like, if the Doctor doesn't have legs, if they're disappearing photonically, there's no way he can walk.
Oh.
There's no way he can do anything.
Well, my favorite scene here is when he's disappeared almost to waist level, but he's still riding a horse.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not disappearing. He's just turning blue. Like, that's pretty much what the comic was telling us. Like, oh my gosh, I'm losing my color. This could be really bad.
I'm going to black and white.
Yeah,
at least he wasn't going to plaid.
I hate retellings that don't follow the same rules, and none of these comics follow the same rules.
Yeah.
And, like, either the mobile emitter works or it doesn't. Either it's flickering or it's working. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm slowly degrading or... Yeah, it just bugs me.
My solution, because I've always been concerned about the Doctor having the hollow emitter on his sleeve in the first place, because, I mean, you know, there's turbulence in space. Sometimes you have aliens grabbing at you. You know, you might get caught as you're running through the brush. I think they should replace his mobile emitter with this headband that he's wearing in this comic.
Oh, yes. that would be wonderful.
And so the mobile emitter would be the insignia the Starfleet insignia right in the center of his forehead, attached to this metal band that runs all the way around his head.
Yeah. I think it needs to be in a cup, like an athletic cup that he just wears. And that way, if it gets smacked around, it has a cup to protect it. Because if we all remember in Equinox, his counterpart literally just tapped him on the shoulder and he went to nothingness.
That's a good idea. And also because it would be in the lower section, that would help solve mm-hmm. some of the problem of his legs disappearing all the time. Because
exactly.
You get that's
more,
true. That's...
more emission down there.
That's in my headcanon, the Doctor's athletic cup.
What I want to know, though, I want to know what the frame of mind was writing this comic and thinking, you know what? What if they ran across a planet where everybody just looks like they come from our medieval time period, but they don't look quite like us. They've got little, bumps on the side of their head. And but it's basically going to look like high fantasy. And from every single, not high fantasy. Let's do every single trashy fantasy novel we can find.
You mean like every TOS episode ever?
Yeah. So I think let's just do that. What were they thinking?
I think this is what happens when you spend the day doing a Lord of the Rings marathon and drinking. And then by the end, you're really drunk. And then you pop in Voyager's Heroes and Demons. And you watch that while you finish off one last bottle, and then you decide to put together a comic, and this is, you get Avalon Rising.
You were exactly right. It is a mixture of Heroes and Demons and Muse, that it is the perfect combination of those two episodes, which weren't really great episodes to begin with, let's be honest. I mean, there wasn't anything inherently wrong with them, but it did not become more than the sum of its parts.
But admit it, you had fun reading Avalon Rising.
No, I did not.
I did have fun trying to put myself into the writer's shoes and trying to get inside their head and then realizing I can't. I don't know what they were thinking.
I was cursing both of your names the entire time I was reading this. There's a very... Right before the DC reboot, where the universe kind of went back to zero and all new issues were coming out of Batman, Flash, and JLA and everything like that, right before that happened, they had a really, really awesome Batman storyline where he got thrown in time and he had to make his way.
R.I.P.
Was it R.I.P.?
Yeah, he died.
I can never remember the title.
Yeah.
And he had to make his way back through time, and like there was a caveman version of Batman, there was a medieval version of Batman, a Salem version of Batman during the witch trials, and it was just really interesting to see what the world would be like if Batman or a type of detective like Batman would be in that realm. And when I kind of read the concept of this comic, I was really hoping it would be something like that, but it was not.
And did Batman ask someone, where are we? And did they just say, we're here? As they do
here,
in Planet
Captain.
Killer here?
Yeah.
No, that was an Elite Force.
Oh, was that an Elite Force?
Yeah.
So let's move to Elite Force. This is, I'll show my hand. This is probably the comic that I enjoyed the most out of the four. Planet Killer is not bad. It was the end that ruined it for me. Because, you had 30 minutes to create a solution, and apparently 30 minutes was enough. It would take Starfleet engineers probably a century to do. So Elite Force really does follow the game in a lot of ways. The same characters are there, they're setting up this team to be an infiltration unit for when they encounter the Borg or other such enemies. And so I like that. I thought, okay, this is going to be good. And on a whole, you're right, Tristan. They throw a lot of things into this, but I feel like this one was the one that has the most cohesive story all the way through to the end.
That's definitely my opinion as well. I mean, even though I didn't like any of them, Elite Force was the one that I liked the most, mainly because of nostalgic reasons, because I played the video game and I loved the video game characters, and I felt like this comic book could have benefited more from following the storyline a little bit more closely of the video game, and also focusing on the Hazard team instead of trying to throw in Tuvok and Janeway and Seven and Chakotay as much, because in the game we hardly see them at all. It's really just about the Hazard team, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah. Now, when did Chael become a badass? Because in Learning Curve, I cannot picture that Chael doing the stuff that Chael does in this comic.
Intensive training from Tuvok.
Yeah, he went to Tuvok's remedial school for badasses, and he really bulked up.
A lot of PowerPoints going on at Tuvok's remedial school for badasses. Aren't there?
Yeah. I never understood why the Hazard team was always in red. Shouldn't they be in gold?
Or black?
Yeah, I mean, or black, yeah. Let's make it that way.
Let's put you in a suit that's really visible.
Right,
from,
let's pick,
you know,
the most visible color that we have. Why don't we just put, like, oh, you know that old Spock helmet? Have you guys seen this? It's apparently from the 70s. It's like it's a helmet, and it has a giant red police light on top that spins and flashes. And on the package, it's like Star Trek Spock action, and it's got this kid wearing the helmet. It's the weirdest Star Trek collectible I've ever seen. Google it. You'll find it. They should just put those on the hazmat team here. They might as well. You've got the red shoulders. Just put the red flashing light helmet on top of them and let them go.
What I did like about this comic is the lines that Seven has towards one of the members of the Hazard unit. He says,
when you're digging yourself
up. That hole you're digging is getting deeper.
What does he say? As Borg butt goes, you got, don't dig yourself in any deeper, Mr. Beesman.
As Borg butt goes, you got
as
it going
Borg
on.
Goes.
Well, it's true. It's Seven. You know what I liked in this comic is that Seven straps on a normal uniform. She puts on the Elite Force uniform. So if Seven can wear the Elite Force uniform, why can't Seven just always wear a science uniform?
That would have been nice.
Like Janzia. Come on, seriously. There's no reason that she can't do it. It's just ridiculous.
They gave some sort of crap reasoning at the very first episode she was in.
I remember hearing it.
Scorpion Part 2, where they're like, yes, I designed them myself. Like the doctor's saying, he's like, I designed them myself. It'll
obviously
help with her implants or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It'll help with her implants.
That's what he said. Her Borg implants.
Yeah. Apparently, the doctor at that point had become a pervert.
The doctor says, I've just adjusted her implants.
Yeah, exactly.
Chakotay says, I can see that, Doctor.
Matt, you read the same article I did about Ronald D. Moore and his experience on Voyager, and he talked a lot about how ridiculous it was to be in the same room as Jerry Ryan while she was wearing that outfit, because he said, he's like, this woman's basically naked. She's walking around set, and she's basically naked, and everybody's trying to act like it's okay. He's like, there's no reason to have this in there except for sex appeal. Put her in a real outfit. It was kind of like, to me, it was like Deanna Troi. Her character got much more interesting when she put on the real outfit. Even though I love Deanna from the beginning,
but at least,
I know a lot of people don't.
At least for much of the time when Deanna was in civilian clothing, she would wear dresses, and she wasn't wearing tight body clothing the whole time.
It wasn't a cat suit,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is like the cat suit of cat suits. I mean, it just, you know, it couldn't be any more cat suity. Unless she just zipped down the front and then was Catwoman at that point. I mean, that's the only thing that would make it even, you know, more catty.
If you look at season one of TNG, like, not only the women, but the men's uniforms are super tight. And if you look at Tasha Yar, it's crazy tight. Like, you see every curve on her, but it has nothing on Seven of Nine's outfits.
Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking. But anyway, back to Elite Force. I thought that the idea of what happens to them was really interesting. The fact that they kind of get pulled into this null place of space by some, you know, fortunate, unhappy accident, which happens to Voyager all the time.
I was going to say, there's an episode, I think it's called The Void, where they get pulled into null space.
Right.
And this one just has more debris in it.
Yeah.
This one, what does Harry call it in here? It's a null entropy chasm. I believe, something like that. So
basically, yeah. They throw in the most amount of technobabble possible. I thought that was kind of cool. And then what they're going to stop is this like force that is building itself to the point where it can then replicate itself, so then it can take over everything. So I thought that was really interesting. And that's probably why I liked this comic the best too, because it was one of those things where like Voyager's doing something that's really going to matter. You know, if they don't stop these people, they're going to start taking over our galaxy. And, you know, there's a good chance we're not going to be able to stop them.
Well, yeah, the idea is interesting that it seemed to be kind of like species 8472 in a sense that they come from some other dimension, some other type of space. And what I gathered from the story was that, I don't know, what did they have, like a liquid form going on, something like that? But when they go to a different part of space, they start sampling the life in that part of space so that they then can craft their warriors to be most efficient at conquering that part of space. So if you found them in another part of space, they might look completely different than they do here, depending on what was going on there. But then towards the end, we end up with having like a Borg queen type character, this Tarlis. And I wasn't clear if Tarlis is the name of the race or Tarlis is the name of this guy who says that, you know, Tarlis will prevail. Tarlis is the Forge. It's like the Borg Queen saying that I am the collective, and Tarlis is saying I am the Forge.
Yeah, I thought it was the race because then one of the Elite Force guys starts to argue with it. And he says, you know, how do you know that this is the process that began millions of years ago? Maybe your makers only intended you to be for research. You know, maybe you were programmed, your programming is deteriorated.
So, and so isn't this just like
he just tried to talk to it.
Isn't this just like Kirk talking to Landru?
Yes, yes.
This was like another Kirk moment here, I thought. But I did like this comic as a comic. I mean, as a Star Trek episode, I would really need to have more behind the story than just pure action like we're getting here. But as a comic, I thought it worked pretty well. It had a bit of a Starship Troopers vibe to it here when the aliens come out.
Does.
And they're like giant cockroaches. And even the ships look like cockroaches a little bit as well.
There was a storyline in the game that I was really hoping that they would have incorporated in the comic book. And I can't remember if it's just a TOS-style ship that got trapped in the void or if it was a TOS Mirror Universe-style ship that got trapped in the void. And they actually had to combat the descendants of these Mirror Universe people, and they were all wearing their old uniforms, and they had TOS-style weapons. It was just really, really cool. And it would have been nice to see that on the page.
That would have been interesting to see. I should go find the game. I actually never had that game for some reason. I don't know why.
One of the best first-person
really good,
shooters
I've
ever played, yeah.
I think I was not really... Well, actually, I'm still not really that into first-person shooters, although, you know, I play a bit now, things like Mass Effect and all that have story and shooting combined. So actually, I'm sure I would enjoy this game, especially after reading the comic, and go get me a ripped chill
and an iMod.
And an iMod.
Unfortunately, you will not find any seven butts in I apologize, but those are not available, unfortunately.
Oh, was that... Did you have to pre-order? Was that, like, DLC?
Yes, that was a special skin that you would get if you pre-ordered from GameStop. So
there was an interesting thing like that involving Seven, though, because when you ordered... Well, like, when you bought the game, it didn't have Jerry Ryan's voice. It had everybody else's voice. Robert Duncan McNeil, Kate Mulgrew, Tim Russ, everybody, but not Jerry Ryan. And it wasn't even someone who sounded like Jerry Ryan. But all of a sudden, you could download a patch, and then you'd install it, and then boom, you had Jerry Ryan. I have no idea why this was done, if it was a scheduling conflict and they just wanted to release the game. I don't know. But I remember that getting so excited as a kid in middle school, going, oh my God, it's Jerry Ryan on my computer.
Yeah, of course you were excited in middle school about Jerry Ryan.
Did you guys notice on the page, there's a page where Voyager is going into a debris field that there is a Klingon battlecruiser floating around.
Actually, too, there is a Star Wars ship in one of the scenes here where they are in, when they first get into this null space, there is a escort ship like the Emperor has in episode 6, and you'll see it there on the side right next to the second panel. Yep.
And there's also a Star Destroyer.
Oh, yeah, there is.
Yep.
A Star Destroyer. If you look closely.
So the artists were having a very good time, you know, just inserting a random ships from Star franchise.
It's kind of like seeing Serenity in Battlestar Galactica.
Or R2-D2 in Star Trek 09. So.
That bugged the crap out of me when I found out that that was real.
Did it? Like, really?
I was really hoping that that was Photoshopped.
I think it's cool. It's fun.
It goes by it goes so fast you don't even notice it. You can't even see it anyway. Yeah. So
I don't know. That made me angry. I don't know why.
Well, let's go on to the last comic here, and it's Planet Killer. And spoiler alert, obviously, but they run into another Doomsday Machine, which I thought was an interesting idea because we never saw that followed up with. And, of course, at the end of that episode, Spock says, I wonder if there are any other of these machines roaming around the universe. And apparently, they are in the Delta Quadrant because they always seem to run into them. You know, space is vast, but Voyager will run into it somehow. So,
That's what makes them special.
Exactly. I don't know if it's special or just the most unlucky ship on the planet. but yeah, this is actually, for me, I really like this story until the very end where they're running out of page space and then they just let them solve the problem really, really quickly. Because otherwise, too, the artwork in here is just fantastic.
Do you like it? Yeah, I don't like the artwork.
I love it. I think it's great.
I like the art direction. I like the concepts and the way they lay things out. I just don't like the styling very much.
See, I'm the exact opposite of that. I did not like the page layout, but I really enjoyed how they drew their faces. But one thing that I noted is that none of the characters had the expression that matched the mood that was going on in the scene.
Oh, like the one where Harry is cracking up laughing about how Kirk
stopped. Yeah, or like earlier on, like Seven looks like she just woke up from a nap and is drunk.
Yeah.
But she's, you know, worried. She's supposed to be worried. It was all through that. They were just like, and I'm going to make him look like this.
And there's
like, but we haven't gotten the script yet. Doesn't matter.
And there's the scene where Harry is giving a casualties report and Tuvok looks like, oh God, that Harry is talking again.
And his ears are gigantic.
Yeah, they really are.
Practical joke size big.
Oh, but I also like in here that this is probably what Tuvok is upset about. Actually, this explains the expression on his face. Is a couple of pages later, Harry is the one giving the PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. How is that possible? But it's a nice PowerPoint presentation. He went back in the Federation archives and got some really nice material. And
got video footage, too.
Yeah, I know. It's fantastic. You know, of all the gigaquads of information that you can put in, you know, your computer system, one of them is apparently all the video files from every single ship ever to have existed in Starfleet. That's impressive.
There's a wonderful screaming facepalm of Commodore Decker in here that I need to take a screenshot of this page and crop this so that I can use it. I have a whole folder on my iPhone of facepalms that I can use to respond to messages. And this is
a good one.
One I really, really need.
Yeah, that's a really, you could really Photoshop that really nicely and it would be a fantastic facepalm. So
can we all talk about how lazy using nanoprobes is?
Yes, that's what I was thinking as I went through. This is the thing, like, and it's the problem that I have with Voyager's use of the Borg and how we've talked about this before, how they defang the Borg, and I won't get all into that. But the nanoprobe solution, I mean, you can use it once or twice and it's fine, but it does become a thing, and it happens here in Planet Killer, where every time we need a solution, it's nanoprobes. And Seven's basically saying, you know, the Borg tried to stop these guys and didn't work. And yeah, I know that our entire system is based on nanoprobes and it didn't work. But I think, you know, if I sprinkle some human hair into it, everything's going to work fine this time.
That was totally their justification as well. It was like, yeah, it's nanoprobes, but mixed with human technology, because we all know that no human has ever been assimilated by the Borg before. Oh, wait, no. The person talking was a human who was assimilated by the Borg.
So, yeah, the nanoprobe solution is really, really lazy, and it becomes just...
It's the same solution that you get when, you know, you have Superman... And you've created a villain that isn't as strong as he is. So what do? They have to bring out kryptonite because it's the only way, you know. So it's the same thing, you know. Borg nanoprobes are like the kryptonite to every single problem you can have. Just throw some Borg nanoprobes at it. It'll be fine. Just, you know, rub some Borg nanoprobes on it. You'll be good.
Yeah, like walk it off, shake it off, rub some dirt on it. I was another Star Trek example was I felt like they did that with Bashir and his genetic enhancements towards the end of the show. Like whenever they needed a plot device, like whenever they came, like whenever a question arose, like O'Brien was like, well, how are we going to get out of this this virtual reality that we're in? He's like, oh, well, since I'm genetically enhanced, I'll just tell my heart to wake myself up. And we're like, oh, okay, cool. All right, done. I felt like,
yeah, something
like there's certain
be able to
things
do.
That start off cool. Like his genetic abilities and also the nanoprobes. Those are really cool. Like, oh, sweet, we can take the nanoprobes and we can manipulate them for our own purposes. Like, we can wake Neelix up from his neural damage because even though he's been dead for 48 hours. But no, it's just then time after time.
Yeah,
after
you have
time.
To be very careful when you're writing to not become lazy and overuse things like that. Because, yeah, you're right. The first time you use it, come up with it, it can be very interesting. But then it starts giving you an easy out, and that's when you have to stop.
Yeah.
Well, we have almost been talking about this for an hour, so just wanted to kind of wrap up some final thoughts on the comics. And, you know, these comics are older comics. They're not new. They also, I think, really show that sensibility. I think in some ways, comics have become a little bit more sophisticated than what we're getting here. So I'm trying not to hold them to the exact same standard that I might, you know, those comics that I read now that I'm really hoping will, you know, just kind of rock my socks off. And so, Tristan, just any last thoughts?
I'd have to agree with you, but I think that may only apply to Star Trek comics. I feel like I think there have been some really, really amazing comic books that are decades older than this, but I feel like Star Trek comics have definitely matured, especially in the past decade, and I think these are a far cry from that. And even though I didn't particularly like these comics, even though I don't like particular Star Trek things that are out there, like fan series and fan fiction or certain comic books or novels, I am so happy that they exist. Even if I don't like them, I'm glad that they're out there for people who do, because I want the Star Trek universe to keep going. And so that's kind of my positive spin on these.
Well, that's good. What do you think, Chris?
I'm just going to run through each of them real quick and give my summary of what I think about them. So False Colors, I thought, had a really interesting concept that could have probably been an interesting concept for an episode, if they had turned it into that, these aliens that are posing as Borg to try to intimidate other races. But the comic really fails because it just ends. And you don't know. It's like, okay, we got away. See ya. So I was disappointed in that. Avalon Rising is... it's insanely brilliant. How's that for a word? It's a bizarre comic that I would have to say that it's a terrible comic, but at the same time, it left me laughing. It was a nice end to my day, and it was really fun, and it had some really beautiful artwork in it, even though it was basically a ripoff of several Voyager episodes and several other books and movies. And it was just a total rehash and it was bizarre. But please go get it and read it because it's just an experience that I think everyone should have. Elite Force, I think, would have made a fantastic movie. We know it was a video game. I enjoyed Elite Force as an action story. And then Planet Killer, it was nice to see them go back to TOS because, you know, Janeway likes to sit in her ready room sometimes and say, in the words of the famous Captain James T. Kirk, or Captain James T. Kirk once described so-and-so as... And so here they actually really incorporate a TOS element into a Voyager story. But, you know, the solution is very lazy with the nanoprobes. But, so it's an okay story. I didn't love any of these comics, not the way that I am enjoying the ongoing or the Countdown to Darkness comics. But they're fun. I think the artwork is good. Voices are good. So, you know, if you're a Voyager fan, for sure, if you're a Star Trek comic fan in general and you haven't read these, it's worth picking up if you get your hands on them.
Well, I guess I'd say, you know, Chris, we've gone back and read some of the older comics. We did Frontier Doctor, and I was just blown away by how good that was. Just, you know, all of those were spectacular, I think. And so when I came to this, I thought, oh, this will be fun. You know, another great comic series. You know, and we'd also read the Divided We Fall series.
Which was very good.
That David Mack had done, which, yeah, again, fantastic.
The S9
so I came
series.
To this thinking, this is going to be great. It's going to be Voyager. We're going to have Tristan on. Then I started reading. I think what happened is that they're writing these comics, and they really are in a conundrum of they're writing when Voyager is still in the air, so they have to put everything back in the box very quickly.
Right.
And just like any of the numbered novels do that you might read for any of the series, when the show is going on, they can't really do very much. And so the comics really suffer for that. For me, the best comics in this series, well, I've already given out my hand. I've already shown it to everyone. It was Avalon Rising, but I really enjoyed Elite Force on a whole. I think I liked it more than anybody else here, and I also like Planet Killer until the end. And so, you know, I guess, you know, if I was gonna have to recommend this, would I really recommend somebody spend $11.99 on Comixology? I don't know. If you really like Voyager and you just really like Star Trek comics, I think you'll really enjoy this. If you're just kind of a casual fan, I'd say this probably isn't going to be something you're going to be glad you spent $11.99 on. You know, and if I had to rate this, I'd probably give this 4 out of 10, 7 of 9 butts.
All right. Well, I'm going to give
That's a lot of numbers.
I'm going to give it,
yeah, it was
5 neutronium shields.
Out of 10?
Out of 11, actually. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, nice. I like it. Tristan, what about you?
I'll give it 1 Star Destroyer.
Excellent. Well, that's pretty high rating. I mean, Star Destroyers are big. So.
Yeah, they're pretty big.
I will say, Matthew, that if you do want to read this and you don't want to drop $11.99, periodically through the year, at least through the Star Trek Comics app, they do like a half price sales on a lot of Star Trek comics. And pick it up then, at least for Avalon Rising.
Or you could spend even more and you could get that complete Star Trek complete collection on DVD where they're all in PDF form. And so you'd get it for like, what, 50 cents each or something like that?
Yeah, well, less.
If
actually.
You spread it out, yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, that's definitely the best deal if you can find that. They do still sell that on Amazon, so you can find that there. Well, Tristan, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It was great to have you on. We'll definitely have you back to do a Voyager novel or a Deep Space Nine novel, something else that you'll really want to sink your teeth into. I honestly have been thinking that we need to have you on specifically when we talk either Mosaic or Pathways.
Oh, you better have me on when you talk about Mosaic or Pathways.
In fact, you know, we may you know, see if we can have a couple of y'all from To the Journey. I know that you all talk about those. It's my favorite drinking game. But tell everybody where they can find you on the internet.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at The Insane Robin, and you can also find me on Trek FM's own To the Journey, where
to
we talk
journey.
About all things...
To the Journey!
Exactly. We talk about all things Star Trek Voyager, where we give it much love because it needs much love.
I think I've heard Riker say that before.
That's because Riker's awesome. Okay. Even he was on Voyager.
Well, Matthew, that was an absolute blast. You said in your closing that maybe, you know, you thought we'll have Tristan on, and maybe you were hoping the comments would be better. But I have to say the discussion itself was great, and I loved having Tristan on, and I just really had a blast talking about these comics with you guys today.
Yeah, it really was so much fun. You know, we have not had a show where we just kind of laughed a lot about some of the things we had been reading, and so this was a lot of fun to get to do. You know, Voyager tends to be a little bit more lighthearted, and the comics definitely were for us, and so that's very enjoyable. And two, obviously, just again, great to have Tristan on. Such a good guy, shampoo model too. So I need to figure out what product he was using, because wow, I gotta say, it's too bad he's married.
Oh my. Wait till the girl hears that.
Yeah, and before I get myself into too much trouble, Chris, why don't you tell everybody where they can find us?
Okay, that sounds like a good idea. As Seven said in Elite Force, in that hole you're digging yourself, it's getting deeper.
Story of my life.
So if you want to, so if you'd like to contact us and share your thoughts on Voyager, on these comics, on anything else we talked about in news, anything you'd like to hear us talk about on Literary Treks, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and send a Literary Treks, and that will come to Matthew and me. You can also find us over on the forums, which are on our website at trek.fm/forums. There's a section there for Voyager. There's one for Literary Treks, one for books and comics as well. And you can talk to us and other listeners there about the shows and any topic you want to discuss related to Star Trek. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and of course on Twitter under username trekfm. Matthew, what if people want to look you up personally?
Well, if you'd like to look me up, I'm on Twitter at MattRushing02. And of course, I'm on Trek FM doing the book reviews. So if you're looking for the latest book review from the latest Star Trek book, please check there. And, you know, if you get a chance, give me a comment. If you've read the book, let me know what you think, either, you know, there on the book review or in the forum. I'd love to have some discussion about what people are thinking about the books that they're reading Star Trek-wise. Even if it's not the newest one, just pick out a book that you're reading and let me know what you're thinking. Maybe I haven't read it, so I'd love to be able to talk about that. And then lastly, of course, you can find you and I, Chris, on The Orb, where we talk Deep Space Nine all the time. We have a fantastic time doing it. Maybe you're a Voyager fan who needs to be talked into liking Deep Space Nine. Well, this is really the podcast for you.
It's your mission.
We hope you will join us there. Exactly. It really is. So, Shervin, yeah. You need to start listening.
Shervin needs to start listening. All right. Well, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that username. And in addition to The Orb, you can also find me each week on The Ready Room, where we talk about Star Trek news and all the series. We start with TOS, we go all the way through Enterprise, and we loop back around. And it's a nice combination of serious discussion and humor. And Matthew is sometimes joining me on there as well. Also, Matthew, let's take a quick moment and thank our listeners who have left us reviews on iTunes. We've had two recent written reviews, one from Colonel S. Gator 1, and one from, and you know, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce this, it's C. Gumprecht, C-G-U-M-P-R-E-C-H-T. And both 5-star reviews. They're both really enjoying the fact that there is a podcast dedicated to Star Trek books. You know, in the case of Colonel S. Gator, he says he's been collecting Star Trek books for 23 years and he has over 500 on his shelf and he's still going. And that's brilliant. And we knew that there are many readers like that out there. And that's why we put together this show. So we really appreciate your reviews. And then also we're going to jump over to our UK store because we can't actually look at all the reviews together. So if you are outside the US and you send us a review, if you leave a review for us, drop us a line and let us know so we can go look in that store. And over in the UK, there's Flippy18 UK, who has also left us a 5-star review. And Flippy says they don't usually read all of the Trek literature on offer, but this podcast is a great way of discovering what might be of interest to you. So we're really glad that we can help you discover the full extent of Star Trek literature and everything that's out there. So thanks a lot for your support as well, Flippy.
What we had hoped for the podcast is happening is really getting a chance to introduce maybe some Star Trek fans who haven't been into the books or comics before, see their validity now, especially since this is the only place to get the Prime Universe. So thank you so much, guys and girls, for giving us those reviews. And it does help other people find the show in iTunes. There's some strange inner working that I don't really understand. I think it has to do with calculating mice. It's kind of strange.
It really is strange. Yeah, I don't know how it works, but we appreciate it. Lastly, we would also like to invite you to support our sponsor, Squarespace. You can go over to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK4 to get 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts for what I promise you really is absolutely the best hosting platform and the best CMS that you will find anywhere to create a personal blog, a website, a portfolio, or an online store. So go please check it out, squarespace.com/trek, 14 days, free trial, no credit card required, and then use offer code TREK4 when you make your purchase.
Thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, live long and read on.
What do you call that, light reading?
To each his own, number one.